time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by Big Ass Fans. Ideal for home and business applications, including clean air system models to kill viruses. Go to bigassfans.ca.
Weekending round table for this Friday, the 26th of February. Welcome to it. Joining us, former Liberal MP, senior advisor at Queen's University, and author, Selina Caesar-Chavan. Hello.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. And it's Jay. You were just talking to Mark, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry, Jay. Sorry.
Gosh, no worries. Chris Chapin
is here.
Okay,
Mark's
as well.
More likable than Jay. It's not a big deal.
It's so true. Chris Chapin is here, partner at Upstream Strategy. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm good, sir.
Jay, Mark, doesn't matter. Let's talk about what we've been talking about this afternoon. A real big conversation today. 55% of Ontario's nursing home workers have opted for the vaccine. One of the main reasons behind it, that they think that the number is so low, is because of the myth factor, that the myths that are going around about the vaccine has caused people to think twice about it. Here are some callers. This is actually a husband and wife sitting in their car who both work in long-term care from just before 4 o'clock.
But it's not going to protect me. It's given me a false sense of security that I can still get COVID unless I follow all the training that I've already had.
So let me ask you this.
Through the entire pandemic,
Jim,
I can still get COVID.
Selina, that sparked a very big conversation on both sides of things, where people were outraged that I would even insinuate that people would have to get this vaccine to show up to work.
So, you know, Jay, I was listening to the mayor speak. I'm on one of the City of Toronto's vaccination task force. Before I was in politics, I owned a healthcare-based research management company that worked on vaccines and worked on other clinical trials. People should be encouraged to get vaccinated to work and to protect them, not only themselves, but most importantly, the residents and patients that they're working with. But I understand the hesitancy. Many believe that it has been rushed. They do not understand the technology. They do not understand that, you know, it's something that will help prevent them getting the virus. It will reduce the severity when they do get the virus. It is a booster. You're still going to get COVID. But I think all of that needs to be acknowledged. We need to acknowledge where people are, but we need to be giving them information, credible information, so that they understand that they can make an informed choice, and that we can increase these vaccination numbers because people are dying. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to prevent.
Chris, is that what's responsible here, an information gap that needs to be filled in, almost a vacuum that needs to be filled in so people feel more comfortable and less anxious?
It certainly plays a role. You know, there's no question that there's a lot of bogus information going around about the vaccine that are scaring folks. You know, there's a lot of confusion going around about, you know, what that means if you get the virus again. But, you know, the vaccine has been proven to ensure that you're not going to be hospitalized. You're not going to actually get sick from it. You could very well test positive for carrying the active antibodies, but you won't actually get sick of it. So it's not, you know, that's the whole goal and outcome we're trying to achieve here. That said, I think what Selina said is also accurate. You know, it's okay for people to be hesitant. It is okay for people to question how we developed a vaccine so quickly. There's a lot of questions and uncertainty around that. A lot of it's, you know, been proven to be, you know, fake news, if we will. But I think at the end of the day, you know, I everybody that's smart enough to go get one goes and gets one. You know, it's ultimately personal choice. We're certainly never going to force this on people. No government's going to take that upon themselves for forced vaccinations. I just think, you know, go read up. There's a lot of really informative, simple, down-to-earth videos that break it down for you. Take a read through, and I think the science will explain itself.
The LCBO telling us today they will no longer collect air miles at its stores. It's ending its partnership with the reward program on the 31st of March. LCBO has offered air miles since 1997. Now, Selina, a lot of reaction on the show today, and a lot of people saying, you know, essentially that I'm not going to go there to get my booze anymore. And, of course, we're asking the question, where the heck else are you going to go? Is this going to be, I mean, they are a monopoly. I guess maybe this was always going to come eventually because there's really no need for them to offer more carrots for us to go in because we already are?
Well, that's kind of true. And where are we flying to right now? Like, I mean, it kind of makes a little bit of sense. But, you know, as long as the LCBO stays an essential service, I don't collect air miles, so I'm good. You know, they could get rid of the air miles or any other reward program. They just need to stay open. However, if this is a quid pro quo, and if they're going to get rid of something, we should get something in return, then the LCBO should open on Mondays.
Yeah, you know, in terms of...
Bringing the high heat, I like that.
That almost got by me, Selena. You got my vote. You got my vote. Let's get her open again. Now, Chris, in terms of strategy, what kind of strategy is going on here? Because, you know, they've told us nothing about the reasoning behind it. Not that they have to, but is it leaving a hole? Will there be someone eager to step up and be part of it?
I'm sure somebody's going to step up and, you know, offer it. It's just such great exposure. There's very few industries out there, retail, where you have a monopoly. So, you know, whether it's something like Aeroplan or a different reward system that steps in, I'm sure somebody will offer it. They're expensive. You know, they offer up a decent amount of monetary amount of money every year to the LCBO to be that rewards program. But, you know, I don't think, is it really going to stop a single person? I refuse to believe that. But I will absolutely second Selena's motion. I remain perplexed why the LCBO is the only retail outlet in the entire province that must be shut on Monday.
Yeah, we're burying the lead on this story, aren't we?
Yeah. I think the four of us need to start our own campaign here. I think that's where this needs to go. We were talking a little earlier in the show, and I'm going to bring this up. I know it wasn't on your list, but I think it's pretty straightforward stuff. I was watching a movie the other night, which I absolutely loved, and it stuck with me. It's called Judas and the Last Messiah. And it was one of those movies that was really powerful. And it's very similar. It tells the story of Fred Hampton, who was a member of the Black Panthers and who was somebody who was very vocal in the Black Panther movement back in the late 1960s. That movie has been snubbed from the Golden Globes. And one of the other movies that's very similar has to do with the Chicago 7. Maybe you guys have seen it. It was on Netflix. It is still on Netflix. We talked to Richard Krauss about the movie's plot, the one that I saw the other night, and about a little bit about the Hollywood Foreign Press who makes these nominations. Let me just get that for you. One second. My apologies here. In case you thought Richard was being quiet, he's not. No, I've got it here.
The most surprising thing about this story is that it took 51 years to make a movie about it. It is the story of Fred Hampton, who was the chairman of the Black Panthers in Detroit. And it actually starts with a character played by Lakeith Stanfield, who didn't get nominated and should have. He plays a petty thief who tries to steal a car while posing as an FBI agent. The FBI arrests him and makes a deal with them. Infiltrate the Black Panthers, get close to Fred Hampton, give us information, and we won't send you to jail. He does that, and there are tragic results. This is a true story, and it really is so effectively told in this movie. And for all the reasons that you said earlier, great story from history, really recreates the time and place. And you would think, with the Golden Globes coming up, that that name, Judas and the Black Messiah, would be all over the nomination list, and it wasn't.
Yeah, Selena, and you know, I did a little deeper digging on this, and it turns out that nobody on the Hollywood Foreign Press is black. They're all a bunch of white people, and I think when you nominate the movie, and they did nominate the Chicago 7, that's very Hollywood, that features a lot of A-level white actors, and you snub a movie like this that's very gritty, it's got a lot of unknown actors in it, but I think that added to the quality of the film, that doesn't make me feel comfortable watching the Golden Globes this weekend.
And I think you hit the nail right on the head here. When you don't have that degree of diversity to appreciate sort of these backstories that don't have the sort of A-list Hollywood types that probably are not the big blockbusters, but really tell a profound story of that time, a story in which, you know, we have read many, many times about Fred Hampton. Like, we need to understand that why we keep getting snubbed. You know, this could be Denzel Washington and Malcolm X, like the really great movies that continuously get snubbed because the jury by which is vetting them is not a jury of necessarily of their peers. And yeah, I think that it's very unfortunate. And we would hope that after 2020, we would have saw something a little bit different, either diversity within the jury or a little bit more of a cognition about the importance of these movies.
Chris, this is the one thing that bothers me a lot about award seasons, because you never know who the people are behind the scenes putting these nominations forward.
Yeah.
We probably never will. You know, I don't watch award season shows because I think they've gotten so silly for the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. To me, it's become a joke. That said, is that something that would actually stop me? Like, no, I mean, like, there has been, I think, of the Oscars, for example, over the last several years, and they've done a much, much better job at acknowledging, you know, the creative arts and works of you know, backgrounds and different ethnicities. Like, I mean, it wasn't long ago that Moonlight won Best Picture, directed by an African-American. You know, we had nominations for Selma by Oprah Winfrey, Get Out by Jordan Peele, Black Klansman by Spike Lee. Like, they have done a good job at acknowledging it. It's just there's always, and you know, and we can always accept that you can do better. And to me, that's, I think, the big takeaway is just like, yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, this art show, this, you know, the Golden Globes isn't going to dictate what goes down in history as a good movie. You know, people watching it are, and I think that's what truly matters.
Guys, before we let you go, don't know how we missed this, but thank you at 7-10-10 for all of your texts. Effective Monday, March the 1st, the LCBO reopens on Mondays.
Wow, that was a quick campaign with the four of us.
That was great.
Well done, guys. Everybody. High fives
you're
all
around. Welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome there, buddy.
Good job,
Chris,
Selena,
have a good weekend all the way to Monday. We appreciate it.
The Roundtable Podcast was brought to you by Big Ass Fans. Ideal for home and business applications, including clean air system models to kill viruses. Go to bigassfans.ca.